You're listening to IdgitCast, Season 5, Episode 7, The Curious Case of Dean Winchester. In an effort to save Bobby, Dean plays high-stakes poker with a witch, where time is currency, turning Dean into an old man in minutes.
Welcome back to IdgitCast. I am one of your newbies, Paul Mackey, and I'm here in my living room in Duluth, Minnesota with my lovely wife, Darcy, and our kitty.
Hello.
Hello, kitty. She's got another... No, that was not the kitty. That was not the kitty either.
Woof.
That was not the kitty, but that was John Pavlich, our expert, one of our experts.
Greetings.
And our other expert is also joining us, Annie.
Hi. Hello. I don't have an animal noise.
Oh, that's okay.
That's fine.
And we've also got Yvette with us.
Drobs. There's an animal noise.
That was not Yvette. This is.
Drobs.
Yeah, that's not me.
No.
Too funny.
And we're here to discuss, as John mentioned before, the theme music, the episode... Curious Case of Dean Winchester, which was long enough that I almost had to delay and think about what I was saying, because, anyways.
You need more RAM.
Yes, I've aged out of some of my RAM.
Yeah,
Some of those chips are fried.
Oh.
Yeah. Mm. It's all of the,
sleep deprivation killing. Yes.
I feel like last episode one of us predicted a Benjamin Buttons type thing, but I can't remember who now.
Well, yeah, I mean, just from the title, I think I was saying Dean aging backwards. I picked, because it is the curious case of Dean, but.
Mm-hmm. Yes. It was pretty right. I mean, that's about it.
Did this air near to when the movie?
This was 2009. I don't know when the movie came out at all. I have basically post Fox. I have very little clue when any movies came out anymore.
Okay. Let me tell y'all.
Okay.
Looking it up. That's 2008.
Yeah, there you go.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
Went and saw that at the theater.
Did you?
I'm sorry.
I did. Well, it was free. They were having free screenings here because it was filmed in New Orleans. And so as a thank you to the city, they put on this little premiere and you could go for free. We have this historic movie theater that's from the 1920s. And
oh, no fair.
It's really beautiful. It has crystal sconces and velvet walls. And yeah, so it was fun. Yeah. I mean, it wasn't the best movie, but it was a fun experience.
Yeah.
Well, I've got a summary from SupernaturalWiki.com. It looks pretty thorough. So we'll go with that.
Let's do it.
Let's do it then. All right. They skip the cold open, but it's basically the old guy. The young guy stumbling up the stairs and aging before the mirror and collapsing. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that. We don't have to go much more into detail because it's not. I mean, other than that, that is what is going on. That's not too central to the effect of the plot.
Well, and then the wife is sad.
Well, she's crying. Well, the wife's crying.
Although, I will say, when we come back from the title card, they say that the guy was 25. And I didn't look up that actor, but he didn't look 25 to me.
Yeah, I don't think he started at 25 on screen. Maybe he started at 25 at the poker room.
Yeah, I guess maybe.
Oh, he'd been aging.
Yeah, maybe right. It just all the way home.
I guess it's just because the way that it was edited was I thought maybe he was just 25 and then he became old like when he was at the mirror, immediately. But I guess it stands to reason that. Given what happens in the episode, that I guess maybe he was already aging.
Yeah, perhaps. It's a good way to explain away the fact that you didn't cast someone who was 25 for the first role.
Right.
or 24 or whatever. Right. On Bobby's tip, the Winchester brothers look into the case of a 24-year-old man who apparently died of old age. They broaden their search to include local missing persons cases, and while interviewing the wife of a missing man, she shows them a picture of her missing husband and says he always works a bit late on Tuesdays. And he's got a big Marine Corps tattoo, or Navy tattoo. Was it Marine Corps? I don't know. A big military-looking tattoo.
Mm-hmm. I think it was the Navy.
Okay.
I don't know. My grandpa had tattoos like that, but yeah? His were really crude.
Yeah.
Like, maybe they did them themselves.
A shipboard tattoo?
Yeah.
People, my grandpa had, Navy ones, and then he had Coast Guard tattoos as well.
Yeah.
And some of them were, like, he got one done in Japan that was, like, gorgeous, and then everything else just looked like scribble scratch. And then my dad was covered in Navy tattoos. He had two full sleeves, both of his legs and his whole back was done.
Oh, my God.
And... yeah, and he had really gorgeous ones. Like, it feels so cheesy to, like, talk in, like, that lingo, but he would be like, yeah, I jumped ship in Australia and got this one, and then I was in New Zealand for this one. So it was, like, a whole story of his time in the Navy. And for my 21st birthday, I got two that match his. He paid for them. They're, like, these two birds on my chest, and those are, like, nautical miles logged, and those, like, represent, like, us moving around when I was like a kid.
Aww.
It's really sweet. That yeah. And it's like a really good, it's a really good thing to remember him by as well. Like after he passed away, like I was really glad that I took the time to get those with him. Because at the time it felt a little cheesy, like going to get tattooed by your dad's tattoo artist. But yeah, like now it like feels really good.
Aww. Wow. Yeah. Your grandpa's were Coast Guard. Right?
No. Grandpa Larry is Army.
Grandpa Larry was Army. Oh, yeah, okay. I'm sorry. I'm mixing up grandpas.
My other grandpa may have had them, but I would have never known because I don't think I ever saw him out of a full sleeve shirt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm. Right. Larry was Army. I forgot.
Yeah. And then my other grandpa was Coast Guard.
Mixing up.
So, grandpas.
Yes.
Sorry, you know. Not everybody has two, so.
But, hey, you know, if you're going to show that someone is prematurely aging or reverse, a tattoo is a good way to go.
And they also checked his birthmark.
Yeah, that was later on, yeah. Dean searches the house for clues under the guise of going to the restroom and discovers a receipt from an hourly hotel in the missing man's jacket. Dean and Sam go to the hotel to the room the man frequents, and are about to pick the lock when they hear yelling. They bust down the door, only to discover a fit young man in bed with two women. Dean is ready to leave, but Sam notices he has the same tattoo as the woman's husband and asks the man if he's Cliff Whitlow. He says he's never heard of the man. He says he'd never heard of the man, but Sam's looking through the wallet by the bed, and it is Cliff Whitlow's. Wow, that's a weird sentence. Anyway. Sam does look through the wallet and discovers that it is Cliff Whitlow's wallet. The man admits it and begs the Winchesters not to tell his wife, but initially refused to tell them how it is that he's so much younger now. They threaten to tell his wife unless he tells them, and Cliff reveals he won a poker game at a bar against an Irish guy named Patrick and adds that Patrick said that he doesn't like to stay in one place for very long. And actually, initially he says he played a game, and they say, what, like Xbox? And he says, what's Xbox? Sorry if that's...
Was thinking, like, this guy was such a jerk. Like, his wife thinks he's dead, and he's like, whatever, that's totally cool since I can bang young babes.
Yeah.
Like, what an ass.
That poor woman, I don't think she got any closure at all. She's just gonna think he's dead.
Yeah, how horrible for her. And, like, he spent, like, ostensibly, like a long time with this woman, and he doesn't care about her at all. He's just like, whatevs. How would a jerk?
Would it be... Here's the question. Would it be better for her to like, remember him fondly and think he's dead, or to, like, know the truth?
I would assume that if he loved her, like, it would be better if he, like, played a hand and won her 25 years of her life back.
Ah.
But obviously he didn't even care about her.
That's a good point.
He didn't seem to care at all.
Yeah.
That's a really good... Yeah, he should have done that, the bastard.
Yeah, jerkwad.
If that's the case, I don't know. I think it's probably kinder if she never knew.
Right.
Yeah. Even if she has to spend the rest of her life thinking, you know, wondering what happened to him.
But yeah, the Winchester boys could just lie to her and tell her that he's dead and
they better get on.
Died peacefully or something.
Yeah.
Yep. The boys split up to search because the number of bars in town and the time are the summary writer has got some sentence problems.
I have sentence problems when I do it too, so I'm not gonna.
The boys split up to search because of the number of bars in town and the time constraint. Yeah, kinda. Dean bribes a bartender $100 for directions to the poker game and is headed toward it when he runs into Bobby, who'd already found the game. Dean asked him if he'd stopped the game, and Bobby admits that he'd already played and lost 25 years.
And then he loses 25
The bribery scene was confusing to me because I totally didn't get that he was bribing until the bill came down. That he dropped that bill because he's like, my friend, my balding friend said that that you had this game. It wasn't until he put down the dollar bill,
Ben.
The bribe. Yeah, his friend Ben. His balding friend Ben.
Okay.
Totally, it was like, I'm clueless. Oh, that Ben.
Yeah.
Oh.
I think I just got that when you said that.
Yeah, okay, that wasn't just me then.
Yeah, well, I mean, no.
It took me a second, well, we put it down and then I got it. But
yeah.
The other time I was like, what are you talking about, Benjamin Button? What?
Yeah, why are you bringing, what? Why specifically Ben? Oh, that Ben, I get it. Okay. The Ben on the bill. Below, Patrick is demonstrating his ability to read people. He says he's not a mind reader. No such thing. On a couple of marks and flirting with the woman. Dean interrupts and discreetly shows Patrick he's armed. And he comes along quietly to a private room. Dean demands...
Patrick is real fine. Like, this might be the finest dude that they've had on the show ever. I was like, who is this guy?
He is definitely easy on the eyes.
I didn't look him up.
Oh, he was putting, like, Dean and Sam to shame. This dude is real good-looking, whoever he is.
You got a thing for Irish dudes?
No, I don't normally like that kind of, like, accent or whatever. Like, I'm not against it, but I'm, you know, like, some people are like, ooh, an accent. But, like, I don't know. This guy was fine. He did look like a devil or something, though.
So, is this guy Irish?
I don't know if he really is Irish, but I think that was what he was trying to do. I didn't think he was very successful at it, but...
Yeah?
I feel like I can safely look him up without getting spoiled.
Look him up and it turns out he was actually Irish? Like,
he's from Cyprus.
Oh.
Oh.
But grew up in England. So.
Okay.
And his name is Hal Ozan. Ozan. Mm-hmm. He has been in, a bunch of stuff.
Huh.
Anything big, nothing I've ever heard of. 90210, I guess the redo of it. Dawson's Creek, a whole bunch of episodes.
Prominent Steph would know him then, maybe.
I think I remember him now, but I don't think he had an accent in that.
Yeah. Interesting.
And then, okay, so this is the first time we see his girlfriend, but at the time we don't know that that's his like girlfriend. She was on Ginger Snaps too.
Oh.
Yeah, bringing it back to Ginger Snaps.
Canadian.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's Canadian for sure. Yeah, we haven't really looked in to see how many people were on Da Vinci's Inquest out of this this series. Dean interrupts. I did that part. Dean demands that the he-witch... You're calling him a he-witch in the
Why couldn't they use the term warlock?
I don't know. Well, I mean... what?
Because he-witch is funnier.
He-witch is funnier, I think.
No, but
it is
like,
funnier.
But even the witch, he called himself a witch.
Well,
right, he's just a man-witch.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
That is the way it is. Dean demands that he restore Bobby's 25 years and threatens him with a pistol. Patrick refuses to give the years back and says shooting him would merely tickle him. But if Dean wants years, he can play for them. Dean agrees to play, Patrick initially pulls out 25 chips when Dean asks for 50 and gives 25 directly to Bobby before starting to play. When Sam returns to the hotel room, he's startled to discover an old man there. Dean. And I looked up the old Dean.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that is Chad Everett.
Yes.
He's most famous for a TV show back in the day called Medical Center.
Yeah, he was apparently a hot stuff heartthrob on Medical Center, according to some of the things that I looked up.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, looking at some old pictures, a very attractive man.
Yeah. And
well, you can tell he's a good-looking old man, too, so I get that.
Yeah, and he died a few years ago in 2012.
Aww.
So, unfortunately, he is no longer with us, but...
his final role right before passing away, sometime before passing away, his final role was on Castle.
Yeah, apparently. That's right.
That's what it said on IMDb.
Mm-hmm.
Well, R.I.P., he did a really good job capturing, like, Dean's mannerisms.
Oh, yeah, he's great.
Yeah, he was really good. I was kind of worried that they were going to, like, it was kind of predictable. I was like, okay, we're going to get old Dean. But I was worried that we were going to get like Dean and old man makeup. And I was like, oof, I don't know if I want to see that.
Yeah. And I suppose that Chad Everett's probably at this point obscure enough that it's not quite stunt casting, but they did choose someone who was back in the day, you know, a sex symbol of the 70s.
Mm hmm.
As the choice to play the old Dean, so
I thought it was good casting. Like, I mean, it didn't look really like him, but he did a good job.
He made up for it by really getting like the cadence of his speech right and like his mannerisms, and the attitude and the way he carried himself. Because like they did, I think it was Rance Howard actually was in an episode of Angel where he played an old version of Angel. And they were nothing alike. It's like, dude, you're not even trying. Like,
the guest actors were all really good in this episode. I really enjoyed all of the main three.
Yeah.
I did, too. I liked the lady a lot and that hot Irish dude. It worked.
Yeah, that's really, for me, kind of like the thing that that like makes the episode, because like the plot of the episode isn't that special. And like I remember the first time I saw it, I kind of like, eh, whatever, yeah, you know, no big whoop. Like this kind of sucks. And then revisiting it today, I was like, actually, this is really good, just because like the some of the exchanges they have, like especially with Bobby at the end, Bobby and Dean, and just like a lot of the actors like really brought their A game to it, even though like the story wasn't anything grand.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had fun with it, I think, because we didn't spend that much time necessarily with, like, our Dean and Sam. Like, we really spent a lot more time with our guest stars, and they did a really good job.
Yeah, I think Jensen Ackles was off shooting something else, and so they needed...
I kind of suspected that.
They needed him to, like, not be around.
Yeah. Well, Bobby shows up soon after Sam arrives and discovers Dean. Together, they conclude the poker chips are the key and that they should steal 50 for Dean. Before they leave, a young woman comes from housekeeping and Dean tries to flirt with her. She compares him to her grandfather and says that he's adorable. I don't know if that's necessary to summarize, but okay, that's fun.
Yeah, I got to say this particular summary is a little too in-depth.
Yeah.
Like it almost seems it's like the only thing missing is all the dialogue. Like they're just going like beat by, and then this happens, and then this happens, and he feels this way about it. And
yeah, I think we've actually done a pretty good job with some of the shorter ones recently, just making our own episode out of the whole thing. But this is kind of well, I'll see what I can do here. The three hunters are in Bobby's van, shadowing Patrick when he gets hit by a convertible. The owner of the car runs to find help, and Patrick gets up and steals the car. They follow him to a luxury apartment high-rise, and when he leaves, sneaks in. They sneak in. The elevator is out of order, so Bobby can't come with them to the He-Witch's apartment. Dean huffs and puffs his way up the stairs. The score for this particular sequence was crazy. I mean, I really enjoyed it, but it was like a crazy departure from the usual score for this show. sort of the jazz and drums and all of that. I enjoyed it. But it was definitely a big departure from what you normally see.
You know, I was looking at a page earlier for this show that had a little banner at the top of the, you know, the episode description that said it actually won an Emmy for the score and some other technical design thing. But when I went back to find it to make a note, I could not find it again.
Oh.
Huh. I'm not sure exactly what it won, but somebody else noticed that the score was really good.
I'm gonna guess probably for some of the special effects of like the changing from young to old.
Yeah, it was pretty good. It wasn't just look at that computer morph that's going on.
Yeah, they were really good transitions.
Yeah, enough of it was practical that it looked good.
Mm-hmm.
Like 100% digital looks cheesy these days, and 100% practical can be a problem. But something in between, if they do it right. Really looks good. The brothers search the apartment, and Dean finds a safe that he breaks in. That he tries to break into, but his failing eyesight makes it impossible. They open the safe, but the woman half of the couple at the bar interrupts them and uses telekinesis to injure the boys. Patrick interrupts her, saying the Winchesters are harmless, and explaining the chips and incantations are just plywood and showmanship. The power is in him. The only way to get the ears is to win them off him. Dean is eager to go for another round, but Patrick says that Dean's too old and he's not a murderer, says that Sam is welcome to play. Dean orders Sam not to, and Patrick allows them to leave, but he says that even though Dean has been punished enough, Sam needs a parting gift and claps three times and refuses to say what he did. Exiting the building, Sam starts pulling at his crotch, very detailed, thank you, and Dean realizes the He-Witch gave Sam the clap, a.k.a. gonorrhea.
By clapping.
He gave him the clap by clapping.
Because I know that's exactly how you get that.
Well, of course. Yes. Well, I mean, you know, you're writing the summary, you don't want to just say the He-Witch gives Sam the clap. Yeah, anyways. Yeah, I don't know. The extra detail that I didn't see, I mean... Was that fun? Particularly fun to have the STD involved?
No, that felt really unnecessary.
Yeah, I thought so too.
In fact, it's so unnecessary that I didn't even remember that it happened.
I thought it was a little weird because, you know, Patrick, he says about himself, you know, I'm a nice guy, and there are instances where he is sort of merciful and forgiving. But then he goes and gives Sam the clap for no real good reason. It's like, dude, what the hell, man?
Well, I mean, it beats what the angels do. He didn't give him stomach cancer. He just gave him a these days curable thing. Yep. That's
I mean,
antibiotics.
As we've been told in this show, angels are dicks.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Didn't he catch them like trying to steal ears from him?
Yeah. Yeah, I guess that's true. But then he told them like go ahead and take them. So it's like no harm, no foul. Like,
well, because they were useless to them.
It just seemed kind of excessive. Mm-hmm. Like he was doing it just
clap on the wrist.
Doing it because he could.
It was a clap on the wrist. Or somewhere.
I mean, it seems unnecessary because, like, really, like, this man-witch isn't, like a bad dude. Like, he's not... He never lies to you about what's going to happen. Like, you can play him and you either win or lose fair and square. Like, he's not cheating, you know? So it's like, I don't know. Like, except for that part, like, he just comes across as, like... Just any old gambler, you know. Mm-hmm. He's just lying his trade.
His deal is kind of he's not, you know, hurting anybody who didn't sign up for it. He's not out there murdering people or running a game that people don't understand. He's like he's not a good guy, but I wouldn't exactly call him like super dark side either. He's just
right,
more like a trickster.
Yeah, almost trickstery because he doesn't really. I mean, it's not clear what he's gaining if he wins these hands. I mean, I guess he's probably somewhat immortal or
Yeah, really the most winning those. Really years, the most. Well, he says he's 900 years old. So, like, really, the most you can say about him is that he can be selfish.
Yeah.
You know, and self-serving. You know, because I mean, like, he did take that guy's car. You know.
The next day, Sam again says he wants to play, and Dean and Bobby again say he's not good enough. Bobby, the acknowledged best player in the group, wants to try again, but Dean insists he doesn't have enough years left to spare. Bobby then bursts out that he's got no reason to keep living anyway, and that if he wasn't a coward, he'd have killed himself the day he got home from the hospital. Which is a kind of a particularly, you know, dark turn for this episode that's more or less light otherwise.
Yeah, I was like, damn, tell it like it is.
I think that's why I like it, because it's you come to realize that it's not like a fun little one-off. Like, there's some, we get to some really hard truths in this episode.
When Dean and Bobby return to the motel room, Patrick's girlfriend Leah is waiting for them. She gives them the instructions for the most powerful reversal spell you ever laid eyes on, saying it will restore everyone who isn't dead to their original condition, including herself and Patrick. Bobby points out that her giving them this information doesn't make sense. She counters that she has her reasons, fondling her locket.
So is she not magical at all? She was just like the consort of this guy?
That's what I gathered.
Yeah, I kind of get that impression.
That he liked her and then they like hooked up, but she had this daughter.
But I mean, she's powerful enough to know this counterspell. So I mean, whether she's
she's picked up some tricks.
She doesn't have the mojo to do the immortal part herself, but
right,
she's got some skill of some sort. And plus,
her storyline is real confusing to me. Like, okay, so she's like just a normal lady, right? And she hooks up with this like hot witch guy. He turns her into an immortal. Her daughter dies as an old woman, like everybody does, and then now she's upset and wants to go back to her family. What family? Aren't they all dead at this point? Like,
I think that's the point.
I think that she just wants to not live any longer.
Yeah, I mean, back to your family in the spiritual,
in the afterlife. Yeah,
we'll meet just, again, kind of way.
I don't want to. I can't continue to live forever. You know.
Damn, doesn't seem worth it. I feel like I'd rather be immortal, but whatever.
I would totally be up for that.
Yeah, it's like, all right, well, other people have to die. Why do I? I don't know.
Well, I mean, well, the thing is, though, it's all about quality of life, not just quantity.
Yeah, but her life isn't so bad. Like, she's got this hot guy.
Yeah, maybe that's how you feel, but, you know.
I guess that's true.
Put yourself in her shoes. Like,
yeah, I don't know what the whole circumstance is. She apparently is... It's either socially proper that she hangs with him the entire time, or it's necessary that she stays close to him, because she's pretty much just like staying in these dark hotel rooms and back rooms of bars with him the whole time. So, you know, it's not like...
Yeah, like maybe she's like almost his slave or something. I guess I don't know her life.
No, I mean, she says that that she loves him, you know. Mm-hmm. She just says like, I don't want to do this anymore. Like, I want to be with my family.
Because I'm
guessing that it's possible she might have actually played him and lost, and in order to be young again, she might have like played for like her daughter's years. Like, that's also possible.
Yeah.
So, like, maybe it's her fault that her daughter got really old.
Oh, I didn't even think about that. I just assumed, like, her daughter, like, lived a full life and died at, like,
that's
80.
Also possible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One way or the other. Still sucks.
Yeah.
Hey, before I read the rest of this, you remember that whole 2000s Texas Hold'em craze? I mean, I know it's not entirely over. People still play Texas Hold'em all the time, but it was crazy there for a while.
It was. I remember. Yeah. I actually had to go for work to Vegas when it was such a big deal.
Oh, when it was the middle of the, of the boom of that?
Yeah. And I remember that, you know, everybody's like, oh, yeah, we're going to go out and play. But most of them didn't. Most everybody went home and went to bed. Went to the hotel and went to Vegas. Yeah, we're so tired. But...
I mean, like, I used to watch Celebrity Poker Showdown all the time. I didn't know a damn thing about the game other than whatever they were saying on the show, but it was fun.
Yeah.
I remember watching that with you and thinking, why are we watching this crap?
Yeah.
Well, that's.
But we're watching this.
We used to have a weekly poker night. It was awesome.
Well, that would be awesome. But the thing is, that's like not watching it on TV. You know? You're like, have nothing to do with it other than your watch. Yeah.
There's a reason why, like, in anytime you have movies that where like someone's playing cards, like, it's really difficult to like show that and make it exciting. Because it's just they're just playing cards.
And plus, people have a hard time figuring out poker hands and all of that. So, I think Texas Hold'em is particularly mediagenic because you just got these two cards.
Yeah.
My stepdad tried to teach me how to play poker, and I always get, okay, do I throw in now? Okay, so you call. Am I supposed to raise? Like, what do I do?
Right.
Yeah.
How many steps? Like, how far does this go?
Yeah, we played machine poker.
Well, no, we used to play penny poker.
Oh, I never played penny poker with you guys.
Oh, because when we were in college. Like down in the green room, to pass time, we'd play penny poker.
Yeah, and I was never in on those hands. Oh. I was mostly cast, I think.
Yo, I feel like I have to tell y'all a little bit about the history of poker, just because I've been reading about it. So, okay, apparently our man witch could not have been playing poker for people's lives all that long because it isn't that old of the game.
It's not 900 years old, that's for sure.
Yo, I knew that, yeah.
Certainly not. The earliest mention of anyone playing poker is early 19th centuries.
So in the 1800s.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. So 1829, there's a recording. There's a English actor Joseph Cromwell reported that the game was played in New Orleans in 1829. It wasn't in its current form. But then by 1843 in Philadelphia, we have it having spread across the U.S., and it seems to have started in America. And then it became popular by 1850. We see it all over America, 1875, across the world. Or I guess probably the Western world.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, that's why you see it in, like, like Old West, programming, because it's like that's all everybody did. There were even like big casinos that were all about gambling card games, and then you had like riverboats where people would gamble and play cards and stuff.
Yeah, it's saying that Mississippi riverboats really like disseminated the game throughout the U.S. or I guess up, and then it went westward.
Because then they would travel with the game and other places would pick it up.
Yeah, so we have to wonder what was Manwich playing before that? Some other kind of card game, I guess. Not poker.
Oh, it could be a number. It could be a number of different games. Could be backgammon.
Dice,
yeah.
Could be.
How would you bet on backgammon?
Yeah, I don't know about wager. Yeah, what kind of wagering games there were before?
Just a matter of like who wins, who loses. You play for years, just like any other game.
Yeah. Yeah, there might be not structured wagering, but there's at least a wager on something, the outcome of something.
Yeah, because it's not the gameplay or the structure of the gameplay itself that matters. It's just the stakes, like what stakes you put on it in terms of like who wins or who loses.
900 years ago, you might have had him playing craps, baccarat.
Okay.
So those are,
Sure, yeah. Mm-hmm. Craps is definitely.
Unless he was in Asia, then he could have been playing Pai Gao, apparently.
They would have been playing in, let's see, Regency period. What is it, Garo?
Pharaoh.
Huh.
All right.
Oh, there's a cute little drawing of the gamblers from 1494. I'm going to pretend he's one of these guys.
And then there's adorable. This lovely picture of a novel that is The Wagering Widow.
Hmm. Yeah, that's got to be. That's.
I think I'm going to read that tonight.
Does it apparently have some smut in there, or is it the bodice ripper?
Nice.
Something, I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, but I mean, people have wagered on dumb things. Wagered on whether boat is going to drift to the right or the left or whatever. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Anything.
I guess he could have been waging on cockfighting or dogfighting. There's all sorts of things you could bet on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
So Patrick is playing against an elderly man, Ash. There's two kings in the community cards, and we see that Patrick's whole cards are the other two. He's got a very strong hand, and Ash has two nines. Patrick folds, though, calling it a night and letting Ash win a total of 13 years. When Sam comes up, Patrick says that Ash is now going to live to see his granddaughter's bat mitzvah. And Sam is somewhat baffled by this apparent altruism, but tells Patrick that he wants to play. Yeah, I like that. You know, he's definitely like you said that he wouldn't play against Dean because he's not a murderer. Apparently, when he plays against someone old, he tends to give him a little, at least. Because I mean, if he's truthfully not a murderer, then he truthfully anytime he plays at somebody significantly old enough, he's going to be playing to lose. Apparently.
Mm-hmm. How did that one dude then like end up dying? Like the guy from the very beginning.
Well, he was. Apparently, you know, young and arrogant, and bet 75 years of his life.
Gotcha.
So you know, he'll prey on the young and arrogant, but I guess he doesn't consider taking 20 years off of someone who's 80.
Because like people who are young and try to play that game, like they're cocky, and I would imagine people who are old and try to play that game, they're desperate, and so he feels bad for them. So he might be a little bit more lenient.
So yeah, I mean, I guess it's probably a stretch to say that he's not a murderer. I think he's plenty a murderer, but he's not a murderer of old people.
Right.
I guess that's how you're meant to interpret this whole thing, I guess. Meanwhile, Bobby and Dean are digging up a grave to get the jawbone of a murderer for the spell. While Dean is digging and Bobby's watching. And Dean's whining about his aches and pains, and Bobby says that they're normal pains to keep digging, et cetera, et cetera.
No, Dean is such a baby.
Ah, he is.
Mm.
No, it's not easy as you get older, that's for sure.
I know. I mean, I have thrown out my back like twice since I turned 30, and it's just, how does that even happen? I'm not even that old yet.
Paul and I, just, we have the battle of the knees.
The knees at the moment. You know, the back I definitely affected while I was carrying all of that really heavy stuff moving.
Right.
But that seems to have pretty much cleared up unless I sit real funny for a long time.
Well, I had really bad back problems until I had Fox.
He threw things into
He must have kicked something.
Realignment.
He did something, right? I don't know what he did in there, but
he gave you an adjustment.
I've been fine ever since, so I thank him for that.
A lot of times it can be something as simple as, like, it can be hereditary, it can be genetics, and then in some cases it's all in how you take care of yourself.
Yeah, my knees are definitely... I know that I was walking plenty over the last 2 years before this.
Well, it's not just that, Paul, but you are such a tall guy.
I know. I was warned directly by a physician that I should consider continuing to walk and walk frequently, but not to run.
Never
because
run.
Of the impact and that my knees would go.
Yeah, I mean, it's just the way it's going to be for you.
Oh my God, Paul, it's like you're a Great Dane. You know how like big dogs like joints get all stiff because yeah. They're too tall for their legs?
It's true.
I'm a Great Finn.
He's a Great Finn.
Oh.
He is.
Oh, well, although it's definitely not the Finn part of me that is the tall, because there are not tall fins necessarily.
No, your dad's a very on the lower average side, and I only ever met your grandma and your aunts. They were all tiny.
Grandma and grandpa were both. I mean, grandpa was not taller than grandma by much.
Really?
Yeah, they were short. They were a little old couple together.
My grandpa Larry was short.
Yeah. Patrick asks Sam if he knows whether his big brother knows he's playing, and Sam doesn't answer. He continues to poke at Sam's little brother status, saying he's not treated as an equal. But he's still trying to clean up Dean and Bobby's mess. Leah comes in and distracts Patrick, who asks for a short break, and Sam takes the toothpick that he which had been chewing out to Dean to be used in the spell and returns to the game. Dean and Bobby do the ritual, but nothing happens. Patrick reveals to Sam the toothpick he took never passed his lips. and begins to telekinetically choke Sam. Not a murderer, my butt.
Well, he doesn't kill him.
No, he doesn't. Successfully. The girlfriend stops him, though, saying that she was the one who gave him the spell and again fondling her locket. When asked why, Patrick and Sam return to the game. Bobby and Dean head back to the He Witch's apartment in search of more DNA, but Dean can't find anything. And, you know, if you're a witch and you know parts of your body could be used against you, you're definitely going to keep things clean.
I suppose.
You're not going to have a hairbrush, you're not going to have a toothbrush.
You're going to flush all that down the toilet.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Sam wins on a poor hand by bluffing, but then Patrick reveals Dean is going to die within minutes. Sam tries to leave, but Patrick again grabs him telekinetically and tells him the game isn't over until he says it is. Dean finds a used wine glass that would work for the ritual, but collapses before he can reach it. Sam is obviously upset over his brother's plight, and Patrick mocks him about it. Sam tells him to go to hell and then shoves all his chips in. Patrick says not to do that, because there's poker and then there's suicide, etc. Okay, this is long.
Yeah, boy, let's just
Patrick matches the bet,
the
and the hand gets revealed. It looks like Patrick wins, but Sam has much better hand and wins. There, I'm summarizing that whole thing. Bobby's panicking into the phone when Dean comes out of the apartment building, proper age again, and literally kicking his heels.
The first time I saw it, I had to go back and rewatch that scene to know, you know, because I wasn't paying close attention. I wanted to know, when did Sam knew he had the hand? And he knew on the flop. It was some phenomenal acting on his part the whole time.
Oh, good.
Very impressive.
Will four of a kind beat, like, any hand?
Yep.
Well, I guess your boy could have had four aces, unless Sam had one of the aces at some point. Because he had three aces, right?
He had
a full house.
Patrick had...
Oh, he had a full house. Okay.
He had the pocket aces, and there was one on the table.
Patrick's hand reveals that he has two aces joined with one of the community cards to make three. Oh, no, it wasn't even a full house. It was just three aces.
Okay, so he just had three of a kind.
Yeah, and Sam
There were two fours on the table as well. He had a full house.
Would make a full house, yeah. Okay.
So he had a full house. Sam could have beat him with four of a kind, a straight flush, or five of a kind, had they been playing with jokers. Correct. Now I'm just looking up poker.
Alright.
Sam had four fours.
Yes, four fours. Patrick and Leah are alone, and she opens the locket, showing two pictures, one of an infant and one of an elderly woman, saying both are of her deceased daughter and that she misses her family and can't go on, although she does love Patrick. He plays her for all her chips, and he wins with the King and Queen of Hearts. Bobby expresses disbelief that Sam won, but Sam says he just got lucky and heads out to nowhere. But in response, the look that Dean gives... Oh my god, what am I reading here?
That could be the end. I mean, that's pretty much
like,
the end.
Like, seriously, the whoever wrote this is like, so close your eyes, and I'm going to tell you everything that happened. I'm just going to give the entire episode to you.
Okay, Sam says he got lucky and that he's going somewhere and he won't say where, but then he admits that he's going for a shot to clear up his clap. Dean apologizes to Bobby for calling him an idiot, and then he does say that Bobby has not ceased to be a soldier just because he's injured, and explains that he and Sam don't have much left, that they need Bobby.
You just take all the quotes. Friggin'
didn't say the quote, the wizard. Close. I guess that's close.
I'm just saying because whoever wrote this, like, they decided to include dialogue, and it's like,
yeah, pretty close. Yeah. But yeah, that last bit's important. And that's it. That's the summary. So, do we want to pick someone who wins?
I think it's clear that Sam wins. He won the hand.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, Sam.
Yes, Sam.
All right, great Sam's job, the winner. And y'all, Sam is like kicking butt and taking names this season. He's won every episode but one.
Wow.
Wow. Crazy.
Cool.
It's his turn.
It kind of is.
All right, does anybody feel like they have quotes left to say?
Oh, I do.
Yeah, I got one.
You go first, because I've got several.
All right. You're just like my grandfather. He hits on anything in a skirt, too. You're so cute. You're so adorable and dangerous.
Aww.
I like a little ribald, I guess. But hurry up, you crybaby. Pound it up your ass, Ironsides.
Yeah, I don't know if I wrote down, I tracked a couple of quotes. I don't know if any of them are all that.
Well, Sam had some.
Sam saying, it's like grumpy old man.
Yeah, he got to have a couple of funny lines this episode.
There, I'll say the grumpy old man. I like it when he said, it's a Minnesota movie.
Right. I thought you were good at poker.
Any more? Otherwise, I can go on to feedback.
Let's do it.
Okay, feedback. We've got one email from Heidi.
Yay!
Who says, hey guys, I think most sci-fi fantasy shows have had their episode where a person ages at an accelerated rate. It's a common trope. Old Man Dean and Bobby arguing are pretty much one of the funniest things ever. Emperor Palpatine, John McCain, Benjamin Button, all good stuff. Do you think they made this episode that Jensen Ackles could have a few days off? It was good to see Bobby, but this episode doesn't really wow me for the most part. Until next time, Heidi.
Thanks, Heidi.
Thanks, Heidi.
And then from Facebook, Nutty says, I kind of dig this one. It's a classic be careful what you wish for idea. I also like the concept of trading years. I get Bobby wanting to gamble for youth, not that it would mean he could walk again, but his attitude about his legs bugs me a bit, and I wonder what people who have mobility issues watching this would be thinking and their reaction. He's far from useless, but he can't see that over his own self-hatred.
Bobby's a little insensitive, we'll say. I mean, you know, they're trying to have a moment at the end, and he's all like, "Let's get out of here before we grow lady parts." And I'm like, "Dude, shut up."
Yeah, I don't. I mean, yeah, I don't know enough about the issue of losing limbs in battle, but I think that's kind of, you know, it's kind of what they're shooting for, obviously.
Right.
No pun intended with the shooting, but you know, it's what they're going for is all of the soldiers who lose limbs in battle, and then. Are, you know, sidelined by that and
how feel about themselves useless afterward. Yeah,
I suspect that I mean it's tough to see Bobby react that way, but I suspect that at least whether it's the prevailing, you know, ending feeling about everything, and I think that probably a lot of people at least go through that stage.
Sure. I've had my disability my entire life, so I've had time to get over it.
Dean is way whiny as an old dude. Kind of makes me happy to see him old, make him see what life is like when you aren't young and pretty and perfect. I love the maid brushing off his attempts to hit on her, and dude, lay off, she isn't interested. But I give Dean props for first getting Bobby's years back and then gambling for his own. I thought it was interesting that the gambler running the game wasn't interested in taking years from anyone old. He was kind of like Robin Hood there. And I have to wonder, did he deem the young guys not worthy of their years? Did he hustle mostly jerks? This is a fun one-off episode, and the ending is pretty bittersweet to me. The woman, did we even get a name for her? Couldn't stand living anymore. Sniffle.
That's her name, Sniffles.
Sniffle. No, it's
Sniffle.
Apparently Leah, although I don't remember whether we heard that anywhere.
I don't know if we heard it.
I don't think they said that.
I think Sniffles is a much better name.
I suspect the summary writers got Leah off of the credits, and that's it, because I don't think it got mentioned. I don't recall. Oh, and we did get one more email in the email account from a Jolifar Lopez.
Oh, God.
It says,
this ought to be good.
It says, that's a very pretty name.
It says, hi, I am not your familiar, but if you want, then we can make a romantic meeting in my apartment where you are always safe and me too. I know you think about me. I have nice boobs and slim ass. I am now
24. It was a slim ass a good thing? Ooh.
I am now 24 years old. I like party and lots of fun. Do you want fun with me or do something? Then text me here. You are always welcome, babe.
Well, I think what we can do is take some vocational classes. That'd be good.
Wow. Well, thanks, Joe Lafar. That's a really sweet offer, and I think we're all going to think about it.
Yeah, I'm going to think about nice big boobs and slim ass.
And slim ass, of course. And
I do like nice boobs, so all right, sure.
I mean, Gmail, for the most part, all of the junk mail goes right into the junk folder and never comes through onto your main email. But that one slipped through somehow.
That one slipped through. That was a pretty good one.
And considering
thank y'all.
Considering we're listed as podcast staff, I mean, that's I think that's an offer for all of us. That's the email. The email is the owner of the email is podcast staff, according to the way I typed it up.
Well, that's really generous.
Or maybe they thought that staff was like a, you know, male symbol staff.
I'm pretty sure they did not think much.
Because this is a person.
Sure.
Jolifar.
Jolifar, of course. All right. Oh, so that's feedback section. That was fun. So now it's time to rate it.
Ratings.
Oh.
I thought it was a fun one-off. I mean, I enjoyed it. There wasn't a lot there, but I had fun with it. I think the old guy Dean and complaining about all of his aches and pains and everything. I enjoyed it enough. I don't think it was a significant episode in any way. So I'm going to give it a nice middle of the road 6.5 out of 10. Dime store safes.
Okay. Paul, my friend, I find you to be very generous.
Generous?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. It did nothing for me. I was bored.
You were, yeah?
I was, I mean, the only good thing was Sexy Witchy Man. That was about it.
Yeah, that didn't have an effect on me personally.
Yeah, but I'm just telling you that, in all honesty, that was pretty much the only thing they brought to the table. So, I'm going to give it a 4 out of 10 chewed up toothpicks.
That's what I was leaning for. I was thinking of that in my head when you were going.
Would you stop it?
I already rated it.
Yeah.
I already rated.
All right.
But I thought it. I was like, maybe you should go for toothpicks, and you did. Weird.
All right, who's next?
I'll go. I initially wasn't too hot on this episode, but kind of revisiting it today, I kind of grew up to appreciate it a little bit more. There's a lot more meat on the bones than you would think, given like what the episode's about. So for me, it's more about the characters in this episode than it is the plot. So I'm going to give this one 7 out of 10 enchanted chips.
I want some enchanted potato chips. That's what I want.
I know, that sounds so delicious.
Right.
Annie, what have you got for us?
I am apparently going to be the outlier here. I really enjoy this episode. I think that, for one thing, all the guest stars are, you know, they're really good. I like the story about the old witch, and, you know, who's lived forever, and the woman who can't handle it anymore and, you know, just is ready to, you know, die naturally like humans are supposed to. Whiny Dean, old Dean is hilarious. Sam is gutsy and brilliant, and Dean and Bobby still just consistently underestimate him. And I think it's a really, for me, it's a solid standalone episode that hits the, you know, funny notes and serious notes and the pathos character development with Bobby and stuff. So I'm going to rate it 9 out of 10 grumpy old men.
That's good.
All right. I mean, I didn't mind this episode. Like, I like that we spent time with characters who weren't Sam and Dean. And I really like the man witch and his woman, even though I thought she was a little confusing. Yeah, I thought it was good. And I thought old Dean was enjoyable. So I'm going to give it 6.75 out of 10 bucket lists. So that gives us a total of 6.65. It is, you know, it's down there, but it's not horrible.
It's above average.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Hey, John, what's our homework for next week?
Next week's homework is season 5, episode 8, Changing Channels. And we've got another Nubentary for this one.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
This is going to be a fun one.
Awesome.
Cool. Well, great.
All right. Hey, so I think unless anybody has anything else to add, I think we've had a good episode here. We should call it a night and say happy hunting.
Happy hunting.
Happy hunting.
Bye.
Bye, y'all.
You've been listening to IdgitCast from QuadrupleZ.com. Join the discussion at Facebook.com/IdgitCast. We love feedback. You can email us or send us an MP3 voice message. Please use the episode title as your subject line to prevent accidental spoilers. Our email address is IdgitCastPodcast@gmail.com. The theme song for IdgitCast is by Borrowed Trouble. Find the band at BorrowedTrouble.com. Lyrics and vocals by IdgitCast's founder, Allie Jones, who you can find out all about at imthewonderband.com. The closing music you hear right now is Too Good, written and performed by Jack Mangan, and is used by permission. You can find other music, writings, and discussions by Jack, as well as back episodes of his own Deadpan podcast at jackmangan.com. You can hear more from the hosts of this show. Yvette can be heard as one of the hosts of Investigating Mars, an intro cast for the TV series Veronica Mars, also available from quadruplez.com. John Pavlich can be heard on Castlecast, a fan cast for the ABC series Castle at castlecast.net, and his own Sofa Dogs podcast at sofadogs.libsyn.com. Now you can also watch the Sofa Dogs YouTube channel at youtube.com/user/sofadogs.
Annie is currently acting as global coordinator for Can't Stop the Serenity, a worldwide series of charity screenings of Joss Whedon's Serenity, benefiting Equality Now. For more information on Can't Stop the Serenity, including event listings and how to host an event, visit www.can'tstoptheserenity.com.
Darcy and I can also be heard on the Ghostlight podcast, an intercast for the television series Slings and Arrows, also featured on quadruplez.com.